Good evening, Martin. Welcome to the Space Show.
Good evening.
Many years ago, here in Melbourne, we used to have school kids tracking one of your satellites. What was a satellite and what were they doing?
Well, that was quite some years ago, in probably our first and second satellites, USAT 1 and 2. And those satellites transmitted telemetry and indeed even voice telemetry from a speech synthesizer on the satellite. So many thousands of school children around the world picked up these signals and were able to follow the performance of the satellite, monitoring its temperature and the performance of its subsystems using very simple computers and indeed just listening to the voice transmitted direct from the satellite on little handheld radios.
And this satellite was built within a university environment?
Yeah, both USAT 1 and 2 were built by quite a small team at the University of Surrey and launched by NASA into low Earth orbit in 1981 and 1984. They actually, USAT 1 lasted 8 years, then eventually burnt up in the atmosphere, and USAT 2 is still going after 14 and a half years. You can still listen to it even today.
Oh, fantastic. What frequency do people tune in to hear it?
That's on 145 megahertz, so you can just use a small handheld receiver and you better listen to the spacecraft. And nowadays you can pop it into data into your PC and look at the telemetry quite easily.
Well, if any of our listeners have actually been doing that or do that in the future, we'd love to hear from them here on the 88.3 Southern FM. Now, you developed a whole series of these University of Surrey satellites before going private. Tell us about some of the other ones, please.
Well, after USAT 1 and 2, we built USATs 3, 4 and 5. And they actually were really the beginning of starting to take on so-called external payloads, where we sponsored the spacecraft, but then we had payloads from the European Space Agency and the United Kingdom organizations as space science and technology demonstration payloads. And then in 1991, we started to build spacecraft for individual customers. So we set up a company, actually back in 1985, so it's been going a while now, which is a wholly owned university company. It operates within the university environment and it designs and builds spacecraft for customers. And we also do technology transfer programs with partners all over the world, but particularly in the Asia-Pacific region.
So you're still associated with the University of Surrey?
Yeah, it is actually a university company, so the company is wholly owned by the university, and it operates closely together. So we have academic and commercial activities operating in one building with people working very closely together.
And you're now helping other countries, many other countries, build satellites. What exactly does that involve? Do you build them complete, or do you advise them on how to build it, or what do you do?
Well, we run actually 8 technology transfer programs, different countries, starting off with Pakistan, then South Africa, Korea, Portugal, Chile, Thailand, Singapore, Malaysia, and now People's Republic of China. And each of these programs comprises a combination of academic training and real hands-on construction, design and construction of the satellite. So typically they would send a team of maybe 8 or 10 people from their country, come and live with us for a couple of years at Surrey. And we work together to design, then build, test, launch, and then operate in orbit a small satellite. So it's a real in-depth technology transfer program.
Perhaps we could go through what some of these satellites have been.
Well, there's now 14 of them, so it's quite a long story. But if we take the latest one as a typical example, where we've done a program with Chile and Thailand. The Thai satellite was launched from Baikonur in Kazakhstan just 2 months ago. And it carries a multispectral Earth imaging payload, which takes color images of the Earth below. In fact, as we attended the IAF here, we took a picture of Sydney, more or less as I landed on an aircraft, which was interesting. And this takes pictures with 90 meters resolution in 3 spectral bands, rather similar to Landsat. And it also carries electronic mail communications payload. So these tiny satellites, which are about the size of a large domestic TV, very, very tiny, now have very sophisticated functions and take quite high resolution Earth images. And this was a joint program between us and a university, the Mahanakorn University in Thailand, in Bangkok.
And you have your eyes set on going further afield. You began with communications, you're doing Earth observations, and I see on the wall here a concept for a mission in the year 2001.
Yep. In fact, our microsatellites weigh about 50 kilos, so as I say, they're quite small, and we're going in two directions. One is to go even tinier, down to little beach ball-sized nanosatellites, and then the other way is to go up to slightly larger satellites the size of a sort of kitchen table, which will provide us with higher resolution imaging. And we will launch the first of those next April on a converted Russian ICBM. And then in a couple of years later, in 2001, we're going to take this mini satellite and launch it to the moon. And this is a major challenge, technological challenge, because we're going to do it on a very tiny budget, just about 15 million UK pounds. So what's that, 25 million US dollars. And that's to design and build a mini satellite and launch it to the moon. We're going to make sure we don't miss the moon, we don't crash into the moon, but go around it. And then we have to be able to communicate back. And this means we have to develop a high degree of autonomy, very capable communication systems to use small terminals back here on Earth to be able to control it. And we're going to do that as part of a partnership with our various overseas partners in technology transfer through this Surrey Space Club, where we will get together to build this spacecraft and launch it to the moon in 2001. So a really exciting project.
What will it do when it gets here? I mean, obviously it's a technology development, a communications breakthrough in some ways, such as a small satellite. Will it have any scientific or other purposes?
Our main interest is actually solving the problem of getting there and back safely. But when we're in lunar orbit, we will then image the moon's surface, because one of the things of interest with the European Space Agency is to select sites for future landers. And so we will do some mapping of the lunar surface using the same sort of cameras that we've been using to take images of Sydney just last week.
The communications satellites that you're building, we're really used to huge satellites, you know, a couple of stories high being launched on massive rockets like Ariane into orbit, and then providing us with our daily television news and transferring telephone calls and so on. But the new technologies have enabled you to go into these smaller satellites. What are they used for these days? What sort of things can you use these tiny satellites in low Earth orbit for?
Well, they're quite different from the big satellites, because if you're going to use, say, direct-to-home TV broadcasting, telephone communications and high data rate communications, you really do need big satellites, and you can't effectively do that with small satellites. On the other hand, the tiny microsatellites are very useful for providing electronic mail communications, particularly to remote regions. So, for example, the Thai microsatellite and Chilean microsatellite just launched carry electronic mail communications facilities, which allow remote communities to be able to get access to internet and electronic mail by using very small terminals. So it's a different type of communications, not TV broadcasting, but very dedicated electronic mail type of communications to remote regions is what they're best suited to.
Australia's very first satellite, at least the first one built, if not the first one launched, was in fact a micro satellite. It was an amateur communication satellite in the Oscar series, and of course this is very similar to what you're doing. If Australia wants to get it back into the satellite building business, which we've been out of for many, many years, what would your company have to offer us?
In fact, it's interesting, because when I started as almost a high school student and university days, I actually tracked the AMSAT Oscar series of spacecraft, and in a way I cut my teeth on those tiny early microsatellites, and from that interest this whole business has grown. And one of the advantages of microsatellites is that it is a low cost and now very low risk way of getting into space. For those countries that have never been into space, such as Thailand and Malaysia, as we're working with at the moment, but also those that have been in space, such as Australia, also some of the former Soviet Union states, who now, in their own right, would like to get back into space. So these microsatellites and the particularly the sort of programs we run here in Surrey provide a very cost-effective and low-risk way of getting back into space on a small budget, and achieving really quite dramatic results, particularly in Earth imaging, as we've seen with the launch of the recent satellite from Thailand. And so at Surrey, we specialise in the combination of training people to provide the real in-depth knowledge about spacecraft engineering techniques and designing and building the spacecraft from scratch, because we actually design, build and operate the entire spacecraft at Surrey. And that's the means that when we transfer this technology to our partners, they can then return back to their home countries and do the same thing. This has been very, perhaps our most successful demonstration of this has been in Korea, where a team of about a dozen or more engineers spent a few years with us at Surrey. We got to know them very well personally. They designed and built spacecraft with us, then they went back to Korea and established their own small satellite center, and have then gone on to build a second and now third spacecraft there. So it's a very effective program for getting into space at low cost and with minimum risk.
Wouldn't it be more financially advantageous to your company, rather than transfer the technology over, to just outright build and sell?
Yes, although the way that we perceive it is that these partnerships are for the long term. So through the Surrey Space Club, with the eight or more countries that have worked with us on the technology transfer, we continue to work. After we have helped to train them, they've built their first spacecraft, we then continue to work together on joint research projects. And this way, we can help complement each other with the different skills that we have, and we can try to stimulate and develop the small satellite market. And so we see the sort of collaboration that we have as very much a long-term collaboration rather than just the short-term, you know, like going out and buying a car and driving it away. You know, we're really in it for the long term. Of course, we have to keep developing, and we therefore reinvest a lot of our effort back into research. We have new projects and programs each year, and of course that's what keeps it exciting for us to work together with our previous partners.
Would Australia find it easy to build a satellite completely independently of any assistance, such as from your company or other companies?
It's always possible, of course, to start from scratch and do it all yourself. I think what we have seen from a number of organisations who have tried to do this is that it tends to take a very long time. It's certainly doable. But it probably, instead of, say, moving fairly quickly and at low risk over the course of a couple of years, it probably takes 7 or 8 years to develop that type of indigenous capability, train the people and bring everybody up to speed and get a spacecraft in orbit. And of course there are inherent risks, because you may fall into some of the traps that other people have found and have navigated around. And so the sort of technology transfer program that we develop really sidesteps many of these sort of problems, and means that you can go quite rapidly whilst learning efficiently from you know, blank sheet of paper into orbit in a couple of years. And so it's certainly possible to do it without that, but it just takes longer with only higher risk, and probably more expensive, to be honest, in the end.
Okay then, well, thank you for joining us tonight on The Space Show.
It's been my pleasure. Thank you.